is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next on News for the Soul, it's time for the Whole Health Initiative with Dr. Holly. With more degrees than a thermometer, Dr. Holly's PhDs include psychology, natural medicine, herbal medicine, nutrition, and Ayurveda. She's a scientist, professional speaker, and the author of over 20 books. She also sees and works with energy, and she's here to help you achieve complete optimum health. Please welcome Dr. Holly back to News for the Soul.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to September 21st and another Wednesday. We're having lovely weather here, gorgeous blue sky. Hope you're enjoying the weather and the day wherever you are. Today we've got a long first component on medical. And the reason why is because I'm quoting a lot of people here, trying to help people understand the severity, the intensity, what have you, of what is going on with these jabs. Now, you know that I use jabs instead of the other word because until they altered the definition, it wasn't a vaccine. It's a bioweapon. It's a jab. But what we start out with, and this has been coming up for several months now, so I thought I better start addressing it, and that is with embalmers. Embalmers are the guys that have to take the blood out of a person once they have crossed over. And what they're finding, very unusual appearance, if you want, in the blood of these people. Now, they've all been jabbed. You don't find it typically in people who haven't been jabbed. So we've got the clean people and the unclean people, if you want. But let's go back to an article dated in July 30th of this year, where Richard Hirschman, who has been an embalmer for some 20 years, stated that what he has seen in over 100 cases, and it's not stopping, it's not slowing down. He further states, I am not a doctor or a scientist. I am an embalmer who is just trying to report what I am seeing. If these strange clots are the cause of the ailments leading to these people's ultimate death, and it is found out to be vaccine-related, then the death rate for the vaccine would be astronomical. But these deaths are not being reported that way. They are being attributed to cancer, stroke, heart attacks, or other causes instead. Whether the vaccine, the COVID virus, or other medications are causing it, I don't know. That is above my pay grade to determine what is exactly causing these clots. I'm just saying, please look into it. If we don't, we will never know, and more people will suffer. Now, Dr. Cole owns the Cole Lab Diagnostics, and he's also been sounding the alarm. Quote from him. With each of these quotes I've given you, if you want to go back to the article, I've given you the reference for each of them as we go through. When asked about his part in supplying Cole Diagnostics with sample clots, Hirschman said he can neither confirm nor deny that Cole's analysis comes from what he sent. In recent interviews, Cole has acknowledged that the embalmers from other states have also found these unusual clots and have sent samples as well. Triantos said, I took, and there's a reference for that. Triantos said, I took and looked at the substance with a biochemist here in Birmingham. We analyzed multiple vaccine vials of both J&J and Moderna vaccine. We looked under a dark field microscope with 1,200 times the power, and we saw so much debris in it and things that look like metallic flecks. Looking at these postmortem fibrous tissues, it kind of looks like what I was looking at in the microscope of the dang vaccine. Another reference. Hirschman also said in another place, I have embalmed cancer patients for decades and never seen these wormy structures in their dead gum blood. There are other embalmers on private Facebook chat rooms who confirm what I am seeing, but have to be careful. If they draw bad publicity or controversy to their employer and the funeral home, The difference with me is I'm an independent contractor. Everyone I work for would have to shut me off. My only concern is the Alabama Board of Funeral Services that might take my license. They would end my career, but then I would start blabbing worse than I have ever blabbed before. In another article, Pershman says, prior to 2021, we probably see somewhere between 5 to 10% of the bodies that we would embalm having blood clots. We are familiar with what blood clots are, and we've had to deal with them over time. He says that now 50 to 70% of the bodies he sees have clots. For me to embalm a body without any clots, like kind of like how it was in the day prior to all this stuff, it's rare. He also said from another article, they're not even dead from COVID. They're dying of sudden heart attacks, strokes, cancers. It doesn't seem to matter what these people die of nowadays. So many of them have anomalies in their blood. The blood is different. Something is causing the blood to change. And the whole purpose of me trying to come out was to try to say, look, something's wrong. Let's figure out what it is so that maybe we can find a way to help break this stuff down and save people's lives. Another article, he said, if it's not the vaccine, then fine. What is it? Let's figure it out because something is causing it and it can't be healthy. I had a 49-year-old who was totally healthy getting ready for work, collapses dead. Next thing you know, I'm embalming him. And guess what I'm pulling out of him? The same stuff. The same stuff. He was totally fine, totally healthy. Shocked everybody. Oh, yeah, not only was he vaccinated, but he was boosted. Poker, who's on the advisory board of the Worsham College of Mortuary Science and a member of the British Institute of Embalmers and a board of the North American Division, says, quote, I have lectured 4 times so far this year. I am asking questions and showing pictures of these clots in my PowerPoint. And routinely, everywhere I lecture, people say they are seeing these clots and had not seen them prior to COVID. I've been at it for a little over 30 years. What I think is happening here is that Big Pharma and the medical profession is now playing cover your ass. They know there is a problem. These clots are not forming as a result of laying in a cooler for too long. Doctors are worried about lawsuits after they pushed for vaccinations, and people are starting to now see what was not shared in the beginning about the side effects. We, the embalmers, are seeing the side effects. Mike Adams, he runs an IOS 17025 accredited lab in Texas. We've watched his material for years now. Started analyzing the clots in August. He has found that the clots are lacking iron, potassium, magnesium, and zinc. He claims that this suggests that they are formed from something other than blood. Now, he also provides a chart, so I copied it and presented it to you in the article. It goes through magnesium, potassium, iron, copper, zinc, aluminum, sodium, carbon, calcium, tin, chlorine, and phosphorus. And it shows you what is in the normal people who have been not jabbed. And then it shows what's in the clots. And there's a significant difference. Holy cow, what a difference. So if you're interested, you might look at that. Or you can go to the Mike Adams website and look at it on your computer. Mike says, notice that the key elemental markers of the human blood, such as iron, are missing in the clot, which is just about 4.4% of blood. Similar story with magnesium, potassium, and zinc. These are clear markers for human blood. Live human blood will always have high iron or the person would be dead. These clots have almost no iron, no magnesium, etc. That's what he told the Epoch Times. Now we go to Wade Hamilton. He's a cardiologist and he confirms what Adam says. Quote, the magnesium, potassium, and iron are very low in the samples, could suggest that these are not the usual postmortem clots. That, in fact, there was no blood flow in these vessels. These structures rise, but do not totally answer interesting questions. Okay, then we have the infamous Dr. Tim Penny. Now, she's been analyzing vaccine adverse reactions for years, and she's got an awful lot of airplay, if you want, during the last couple of years. She's taught an awful lot to physicians, and she is a humongous source of information. So if you ever want to go to the Dr. Tenpenny site, it's a good site to go to. Quote from her is, who has been analyzing vaccine adverse reactions for about 3 decades also thinks the clots have to do with amyloid proteins. It appears the answer is coming directly through that needle, spike protein disease, leading to the deposition of amyloids in organs and filling up arteries and veins. Amyloids are protein accumulates that can interfere with your arteries and veins. There's different types, beta amyloids being the most commonly studied over the years. Okay, she goes on to say, the spike protein also interacts with platelets and fibrinogen, a connective component in, like platelets in the blood, interfering with blood flow, also directly leading to hypercoagulation, i.e. blood clots. When the spike protein was mixed with other blood proteins, the combined amyloid-like structure was resistant to the enzymes that would normally break down a clot. Thus, you have impaired fibrinolysis. The fibrinolysis is the breakdown of the fibrogen. This leads to the persistence of a voluminous number of microclots in small blood vessels throughout the body, and the smallest ones are called the capillaries. Millions of these tiny clots effectively block the passage of red blood cells into tissue, decreasing oxygen exchange and leading to multi-organ system failure. Now, I'm going to put in an adjunct to that. You've all heard of SADS, right? That's the adult disorder syndrome, death syndrome, just like we had SIDS, for the infant death syndrome. Now, a lot of people are claiming that much of the SIDS that we've had for years and years and years is actually due to vaccinations. I can't prove or disprove that, but I know it's definitely out there as a hypothesis. Now we've got the SADS, the sudden adult death syndrome. And again, they're saying, yeah, it's a cover-up for this jab. So I'll just throw that in for you. Okay, Dr. Tenpenny also made the statement, whatever is actually found to be in the shot, i.e. the jabs, whether the components are graphene, aluminum, crystalline amyloid, disintegrated fibrin, highly charged nanotech particles, or something else, the disruption in the blood demonstrated on these slides is devastating and irrefutable, as are the corresponding histories of the patients involved, i.e. 94%. The people who took the mRNA vaccine have a problem. Okay, 94%, actually I should qualify that. That was in a study, I've got it somewhere in here, it's an Italian study of over 1,000 people, 94% of them had aggregations or blood clotting issues. Okay, let's go to the Rulo formation scene. Now they're calling them Rulo. Let's clarify for you, what are these clotting systems that are being seen? It's like proteins are replicating themselves, and they look metallic. They look layered. They can be small, but they can be the length of a leg. They can be tiny, but they can be the length of a large finger. So they have a huge number of sizes and shapes and formations. They appear to be self-replicating, and they use up all the magnesium, zinc, potassium in the blood, the iron in the blood. So consequently, you have sudden death. Holy cow. Okay. Next, this is where we come in. Next, we have 3 Italian surgeons who conducted a study analyzing the blood of over 1,000 people. The group developed symptoms after they got either the Pfizer or the Moderna jab. They found 94% of them had aggregations of erythrocytes, which are blood cells, and the presence of particles of various shapes and sizes of unclear origin after 1 month of inoculation or the jab. The erythrocytes are a type of red blood cell that carries your oxygen and carbon dioxide. So it carries the red blood cell that carries the oxygen into the body and carries the carbon dioxide out of the body. What seems plain enough is that metallic particles resembling graphene oxide and possibly other metallic compounds have been in whatever the manufacturers have seen fit to put into the so-called mRNA, quote, vaccine. Again, all these quotes are referenced, so if you want to look them up, you can look them up and read them for yourself. Now, another study was a group of Korean doctors. I think there was four, if I remember correctly. I forget now. And they published an article entitled Foreign Materials in Blood Samples of Recipients of the COVID-19 Vaccines. Quote, these findings are the basis for a recommendation that a collaborative worldwide evaluation of COVID-19 vaccine contents and of the blood and plasma samples of the COVID vaccinated individuals be undertaken immediately with all due diligence. Two, that there be an immediate cessation of the vaccinations worldwide and the abandonment of any COVID-19 vaccine pass policy and any other form of mandate for the vaccination. Three, that emergency collaborative studies of detoxification protocols for COVID-19 vaccine secretly be undertaken. Wow. Okay, so we have all these strange issues, proteins, that are found both in and out of blood clotting, but in effect, the blood is clotting around them, or perhaps they're going into blood clots and developing it. That hasn't been identified from what I can understand. So it may be one, they create a blood clot in order to utilize the nutrients and then, of course, deplete the nutrients, which is why these people are all shown depleted in basic minerals that the body requires. Or because of the replicating, the blood is attaching to them. So are they creating the blood clotting? Are they going into blood clots that are already there? Or is the blood clotting around them? Those are three different hypotheses, and we don't know which one is the accurate one. And actually, at this point, I don't know that anybody's actually looking at that. To me, that's an important issue, but I actually haven't seen any clinical studies trying to identify which of those hypotheses. And maybe they're all occurring. I don't know. But it does appear that many of these clots, these metallic replicating formations, are formed in blood clots. Take protocols like garlic and vitamin K. Remember, there's two types of vitamin K, K1 found in plants, K2 found in animals, and vitamin K. They're supporting their immune system. Well, there is a rule of thumb that if you're taking over 2,000 mcgs of D3, that can deplete your K, which then sets you up even further for blood clotting. So be very careful with that. It's like anything else. You know, calcium, we've talked many times about how too much calcium can actually block the absorption of other minerals that you need in order to make your new bone formation. Well, too much D3 can... as well, especially, in, I don't know if it can, you can get too much D3 when you're making it from the sun in your skin and getting the anti-carcinogen byproducts. But when you're taking it in capsule or drop form, then you can take too much. And it can deplete your vitamin K, which helps regulate blood clotting. So you don't want to do that. Be very, very careful. Now, we have things like garlic that prevents platelet formation or clotting. It's also an antioxidant, and it also activates the nitric oxide, which is important for us in this process. We won't get into that part today. But the big thing about the garlic is it can help prevent blood clotting. So what do you do with garlic? Well, you don't just chop it, and you don't cook it, and you don't chew it. What you do is you take a clove, you take a large knife, wide knife, put it over the clove of garlic, then take like a small hammer and smash it three or four times. When you smash garlic, the tissue actually produces even more compounds that your body needs. So as it stands, garlic has over 350 nutrients. 33 of them are sulfuric compounds that can help you make your glutathione. Even more compounds if you smash the garlic. And when, once you've smashed it, make sure you take up as not just all the particles that you've smashed, but the actual juice and oils that have gone on the cutting board or the counter, whatever you've smashed it on. I tell people not only to take that out, but if it's hard to swallow the garlic and the juice, if it comes back up on you, if you have a hard time getting it down, put it into some real honey. I'm going to take a quick side step here with the honey. It used to be in the old days that honey beehive, commercial beehivers, would start a new hive with high fructose corn syrup. If they had a particularly cold winter, they would feed the bees high fructose corn syrup in order to keep them going. Now they're doing that on a daily basis because the bees will actually make a lot more honey. Problem with all that high fructose corn syrup in the bees is that's changed the DNA of the bees and the nutrient value of the honey. So when you buy your raw honey, go to a beekeeper that has hives and find out how often or do they in fact feed the bees with the high fructose corn syrup. The gal that I get my honey from, she has over 200 hives. She feeds the bees their own honey. She starts the hives off with their own honey, and she keeps them going over a difficult winter with their own honey. So they've got really, really high quality honey, no high fructose corn syrup. In addition to which, she feeds them on an acreage that has wild blueberries. So she knows exactly what they're feeding off of, and she knows exactly what she's feeding them. And consequently, we have a very, very high quality bee honey. Now, having said that, the bee pollen is even more nutritionally dense than the bee honey. In fact, bee pollen can have over 4,000 different enzymes in it. Fantastic stuff. Much more nutrient dense than even the honey, although we enjoy the honey more. So just keep that as a information on the side. Okay, so I've given you a couple of references for the garlic, preventing platelet formation, preventing blood clotting. Now, another way that you can prevent blood clotting is with apple peel. In particular, I always tell you the Granny Smith apples, the rutin in the peel is fantastic. It's also found in buckwheat. Elderberry is a great antiviral, and figs all contain high levels of rutin. It's not only an antioxidant, but again, it prevents blood clotting. I've given you a reference for that. Now, if these structures are metallic formation, i.e. whether it is graphene oxide or some other form of metal, then we have to look at chelators. Glutathione is a fantastic metal chelator in the body. Not only involved in more processes in the body than any other compound, but it is a major chelator. So again, we want to increase those levels of glutathione using turmeric, using milk thistle, using NAC, N-acetylcysteine. We have a variety of ways that we can enhance the body's capacity to make glutathione. Now, that also means your mitochondria have to be working, and it also means the methylation cycles have to be working. So it's not a simple, straightforward process. And I'll say, unfortunately, it's not a simple answer. It depends on what your body's doing in the first place. But people also say, well, can't I just buy glutathione? Can, but you're going to gift it to the toilet, because what happens is, whether it's glutathione that you find in like avocados and parsley and asparagus, if you're taking the whole compound, it breaks down in the hydrochloric acid of your stomach. It breaks down to the three amino acids and the hydrosulfur. And then what happens is, like we keep saying, the cysteine amino acid is the most unstable of all your 21 amino acids, so you tend to lose it. That's why people take the N-acetylcysteine. Some 34 years ago, can't remember how far back, an MLM company patented N-acetylcysteine. That allowed the cysteine to stay, to be stabilized so that the cells could absorb it. Then, you know, breaks off the acetyl, and we make acetylserine, acetylphosphorine, a number of different phosphatidylchlorine, that's a whole other one. But we make different compounds with the acetyl. And so it all gets used up. But the point being is the cysteine is stabilized, gets into the cell, and we can make the glutathione. Okay? So we've got the glutathione, but we can also invoke, if you want, other herbs and foods to help chelate. Chelate is to take metals out of the body. So not only do we have the glutathione we have, but there are different things that we can also use as chelators. Amino acids are great at removing metals from the body. So people that eat a lot of meat or eggs, fish, where you have your heavy protein components, your heavy amino acids, and of course, I always promote using hemp oil. If the hemp oil is growing in good, clean soils, because cannabis absorbs all the toxins in the soils, like coffee does and strawberries do, so you want to have a good, clean soil to grow your hemp. And then you have to process it and package it effectively so that you don't destroy the amino acids. So that's a really, really good source. Whether you're vegan, vegetarian, paleo, Mediterranean, whatever diet you tend to follow, you can get all your amino acids, both essential and non-essential, out of good hemp oil. Cilantro. I love cilantro. I'm always growing it and put it in everything. And it is really effective in eliminating aluminum, mercury, and lead in particular. And it can do that in 2 weeks. So you know, I'm always encouraging people. I know some people really don't like cilantro, not due to a genetic issue, they think. So people either really like it or really don't like it typically. But if you can get it into your diet, whether you're putting it into smoothies or omelets or salads or on fish or whatever, get as much cilantro into your system as possible. Now, there's another one, food-grade activated charcoal, and that's what Dr. Sears recommends. It's not as effective, but it's okay. Take a heaping tablespoon once in the morning, well before breakfast, and it will help provide a general detoxification, including heavy metals. Brazil nuts aren't necessarily a chelation food, although they're often put in the list, and that's because they help to replace many of the minerals that are lost during chelation, like selenium and zinc. Onions and garlic, all you do is we always come back to onions and garlic and glutathione and turmeric. Those tend to be the four big ones. The sulfur, both in the onions and the garlic, is also found in shallots and leeks, can also work to eliminate heavy metals. Now, they say that it can work directly, and I'm not sure that that's accurate. I think it's probably because of the sulfur contributes to making the glutathione, and the glutathione actually does the elimination. But there's controversy over that. So along with things like eggs and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts and cabbage, they all have high sulfur content. And again, that sulfur content is huge in making your glutathione. Perella is a superfood because it has an awful lot in it, but it's a mild chelation helper. It's not great. It's certainly not at the top of the list. I put it down near the bottom, but it is a chelation helper, and it can be added as well. The pod form can be added to a variety of dishes. Then we have, actually had just found this morning, Dr. Ben Reeves. He identifies three. He says cilantro, the most famous herb for chelating heavy metal from the body. Coriander is the seed, cilantro is the plant, and has been shown to remove mercury, lead, and aluminum. And it's also immune boosting. Garlic and onions, again, garlic, onion, shallots are sulfur rich with particular help in removing lead from the body. Brazil nuts have high amounts of selenium, which have been shown to reduce metal toxicity. Selenium is critical, making the body's most important antioxidant, glutathione, which protects from oxidative damage. And selenium can actually bind to methylmercury in the body, therefore rendering it less bioavailable and less harmful. So if you're looking at all these laboratory pictures, and I didn't put any pictures into my article, but there, if you go to the references, you'll see all kinds of these pictures of these various self-replicating protein clotting formation things in the blood. I don't know what else to call them, but things. They can be, like we said, they can be huge, and they can be detrimental. Well, they are all detrimental, and they deplete the body of minerals that we need. So be aware of what could happen if you've taken the jab. Be aware that there are a variety of things that you can take to help protect your body, even if you've taken the jab. Hopefully you were smart enough not to take it. Having said that, they say over 70% of the population that took the jab only took it to protect their job and their income. So it's pretty scary stuff, but you've got lots of information there. What I've provided between the antiviral herbs and the antibacterial herbs, between the garlic and the leeks and the onions, between the glutathione, cilantro, all the different things we've talked about, they are not a guarantee. We don't have guarantees. I always say the only one that can give a guarantee is God. So if you've got anything, if you can listen to what God's telling you, there you go. But we do have a lot of possibilities that help increase our potential for health and wellness. So that's all we can do, is work on it. All right, so that's the article for today. Now let's go to the questions somewhere in here. Nicole sent us questions. Okay, found it. Now let's just see what we've got. Andrea in Parksville, what is a good probiotic to use, and also what is a prebiotic, and how do we know if we need one of those two? Well, first off, the prebiotic are the fibers, the non-soluble fibers. We have both soluble and non-soluble. Prebiotics are the non-soluble fiber that the bacteria needs to feed off of and transport to wherever their prime location is. The non-soluble fibers also help to regulate the transit of your stool, so it helps to make the movement of your poop more regular. So prebiotics can include things like cabbage and asparagus and carrots and dandelion greens. Mustard greens, dandelion greens, any of the greens, collard greens, your garlic, onion, and leeks again, Jerusalem artichokes. In terms of fruit, you have your Granny Smith apples, and in particular the peel of any apple, bananas, cocoa beans, so that's your chocolate, and flaxseed. Those are all great prebiotics. But when it comes to what do I sell my clients, I have about five, I think, different types of pre and probiotics. Some are combined, some most are individual. I have different spectrums for different purposes. But having said all that, I try to get people to use their diet. In my mind, and I've said this many, many times over the years, my filtering mechanism, my belief system, is the body is phenomenally designed, and it was designed to work with food, not with supplements. So to me, the best supplements are your tinctures, because it's using a whole herb, not just drawing out compounds. Having said that, I do use supplements. I have a ton of supplements, and I do use them in certain situations for certain amounts of time. But they're used basically to trigger the body to do what we need it to do. And then I want you to eat your food, hopefully non-toxic, non-GMO, non-microwave, non-pasteurized, but real food to support your health and wellness, because that's what we were designed to do. Whether you believe in evolution or creationism or some combination thereof, ultimately our bodies were designed to work with nature. So use nature. So what are good probiotics? Well, any of your pickled or fermented foods, they tend to enhance the pre and probiotics of food. Now, having said that, if you buy pickled or fermented foods from a grocery store, they probably put in extra chemicals to stabilize and keep the shelf life longer. Those chemicals will often kill the pre and probiotics that you're looking for. Fermenting is a little bit longer a process, but pickling food is the easiest thing you can possibly be doing. Get your family involved. Get some different recipes off the internet, and you can pickle almost anything. We have pickled beets and pickled flour. Pickled beets and pickled carrots. I don't know where the flour came from. I've got pickled asparagus, pickled onions, pickled garlic. Pickled zucchini, pickled turnips, you name it, whatever, beans, pole beans, yellow beans, green beans, beets, different red and yellow beets I've got a ton of pickled food. So when we're taking an offshoot here, when we're concerned about the food sources and how depleted they're getting, how and you know, I've said this for years, how toxic they are. A great way is to grow your own food, and with all the excesses, you can make pickled foods and put them in the garage, and they'll be there for you when you can't afford other foods or they're not available. Pickling foods enhances the bacteria in the foods, and it's a great way to store food. You don't need to freeze it. You don't need electricity. It's just fantastic. So I would encourage you to start looking at fermenting and pickling, not only for your health, but for your food storage. Now, a great food is cabbage. I don't care whether it's coleslaw or cabbage soup, whether it's kimchi, or which is the Korean sauerkraut, if you want it pickled with a lot of different herbs. It's very, very spicy. I don't particularly like it, but I don't particularly like sauerkraut either. But both are very, very good for you. I'll eat lots of cabbage, and we grow cabbage, red cabbage and green cabbage. We pickle the cabbage as opposed to ferment it. And cabbage has a broad spectrum of bacteria. It also has both soluble and non-soluble fibers, so it's a very, very good food. Greek yogurt. Now, I'll specify, use the Greek yogurt. Don't buy it with fruit. Most of the time when you buy it with fruit, it's artificial fruit. There's a heck of a lot more sugar in it, and you shouldn't eat fruit with yogurt in the first place. But you have vanilla with it, just not fruit. You want to make sure that it doesn't have added sugar. You've got enough sugar with the milk product. But you can also make yogurt from almond milk, from coconut milk, from a variety of different things. So think about that, too, if you want to make your own or then buy it. Drinks, the one I'm most common with is the kombucha. Again, something very easy that your family can make. I don't like it straight. Tom used to drink it straight. He was like, really? I combine it with a lot of different juices that I make, so pomegranate juice and grapefruit juice, and I love the real good tart juices, so that's what I combine it with. Your soft cheeses like Gouda and mozzarella and cheddar, they're all good probiotic foods. If you get a good probiotic diet, you don't need to buy any probiotic pills. Okay, now if you are really, really low on the spectrum, I would give you some pills that are clinical grade, you can't get them in the health food store, to jumpstart your system. But I, like I said, most of the time I get people just to use a probiotic diet. If I can't get it up with the diet, then I'll help support you until we figure out what's going on and why you aren't utilizing that really good probiotic. And one of the reasons is typically glutathione and transfer factor. Holy cow, we keep coming back to those two things. All right, let's move on. We got Kelly in New York. I feel my heart is racing when I'm trying to fall asleep at night. Is this a high blood pressure problem or something else? Heart palpitations at night often involve a feeling of a strong pulse in your neck, in your head, or in your chest when you are just lying down to go to sleep. They may be unsettling, but usually not a sign of anything serious. So if you sleep on one side, you may be more susceptible to heart palpitations at night. So you might want to try sleeping on the other side. Another factor is that it may be happening all day. You're just not aware of it. It's because your mind is quiet and the room is quiet and you know all the external stimuli is quiet. So you are more aware of it when you're lying quietly in bed. Now, diet can also increase it, so stop eating or drinking caffeine in the evening. So coffee, don't eat chocolate in the evening. It doesn't have caffeine in it, but it has a caffeine-like compound in it. Don't smoke in the evening. Medications like amphetamines or drugs like cocaine can all cause that. Medical conditions like anemia, and not high blood pressure, but low blood pressure, hypoglycemia, low sugar, thyroid issues, a lack of sleep or stress, those can all enhance that perception of heart palpitations at night. Now, if you have shortness of breath, a sense of fainting, chest pains, or feeling lightheaded, then you want to go and get it checked out. Those are indicators that something maybe more serious is going on. Okay? So we've given you all the possibilities that could be causing it, and we've also given you the markers that suggest that you need to go get some further help. Okay, Brittany in Detroit. I always have a slightly runny nose, and I can't figure out what is causing it. Any advice you would have would be greatly appreciated. Well, number one, a runny nose, chronic runny nose, may be due to allergies, either in your diet or in the environment. If it's in your home, it could be things like mold and what have you that you're not even aware that you have in the home. So it could be due to a number of different allergies. It could also be due to an infection that you haven't got rid of, causing what's called chronic sinusitis. If that's the issue, you can use a neti pot, and often fill full of warm water, put a few drops of oil of oregano or neem oil, and that may help get rid of the infection. You may also have a nasal obstruction, a deviated septum, and enlarged what's called turbinates. Now, turbinates are structures in the nose that may be enlarged. You could have polyps. You could have large adenoids. Those can all cause a chronic nasal drip. Hormonal changes going through menopause can actually cause a nasal drip. You could also have what's called a CSF leakage. CSF is cerebral spinal fluid. And if there's a leak, usually that would happen, say, if you've had a head injury or you've had surgery. Typically, if that's the case, you'll have a salty or metallic taste in your mouth. Usually it happens on the drip is only on one side, wherever the leakage is. But that needs immediate attention if that's going on. Medications can also cause what's called a non-allergic rhinitis, rhinitis being inflammation of the nasal passage. Medications include antidepressants, beta blockers, NSAIDs, so your anti-inflammatories, over-the-counter anti-inflammatories, and your oral contraceptives can all cause a chronic nasal drip. So those are all issues that can cause it. The one that would be the most important to be following up with right away, like yesterday, would be the cerebral spinal leakage. And if you have cerebral spinal fluid leakage, remember that would also leave you with a salty taste in your mouth, metallic taste in your mouth, and it would only be on one side. Okay, that gives us a few minutes to look at the garden. Where's my garden article? There we are. Okay, so again, what you're wanting to look at this point, and again, if you want to be growing that garage garden or a garden in your spare room or an office, you can use a 4x4. You can use a stand-up type of garden. We actually had one almost patented. Tom and I had worked a number of ways that we kept modifying it. We got it all through going through all the paperwork, et cetera, and then all of a sudden seven of them came out on the internet. And it's like, well, I guess we passed up that trip. But you can make one for yourself. You can buy them online. They're stand-up units. They're fantastic. You can get really tall ones. You can get small ones. You can get horizontal ones. There's a variety of different types, but you can also grow raised beds. We have two 4x4s in the garage, and I have, 6 or 7 different types of raised beds besides that, and then I have a bunch of pots using different types of lighting to try and find out what works really well. So things like zucchini and squash, all your lettuces work fantastic because they don't need the hot, intense heat of the summer. So your arugulas, all your different types of lettuces, mustard greens, they're all fantastic. Swiss chard, spinach, all the cool vegetables work fantastic. In addition to which, this time you might be looking at planting inside or outside things like beets and Brussels sprouts and carrots, cauliflower, celery. Garlic, I would wait. It's not, at least here in Vancouver, BC, it's not near cold enough yet. I don't usually start planting garlic to the end of October into November. Garlic loves the cold, the real, real cold. Kale is another cool vegetable that you can see planting outside now. What else? Potatoes. You've got potatoes that bloom. They don't bloom. The tubers is what we eat, not the roots, and we don't penetrate the floral. But we can grow potatoes that are ready in the early spring and then in the midsummer and then in the fall. So we've already pretty much, I think we have one bed left of the later summer potatoes. I've got potatoes growing in the garage garden. Those will be the later fall potatoes. I have Brussels sprouts growing in the garage, radishes, onions, mustard greens. I don't have peas because I don't like peas, so I don't grow them. But beans, now beans aren't a cool vegetable, but I am growing them in the garage, and I am growing both bush beans and pole beans. So what else? Remember with your tomatoes, pinch off the tops to allow the produce to ripen. After harvest, you can freeze tomatoes whole or sliced, wash and dry, cut the stems away, core them. And the reason I core them is to keep all those seeds. Those seeds are your next plant, year's plant. But you don't need to skin them. Now, a lot of people, at least all the recipes I used to read, and I used to actually follow it, and I had a machine that would help do it, is skin the tomatoes. And I find I keep all the skins in them. And then what happened was, I'll give you a quick story. One year, my dad and I were doing tons and tons and tons of tomatoes. We canned like 100 jars of tomatoes. We had all this tomato peel left. And I looked at him and said, I don't know why we're throwing this out. The tomato skin, like the skin of any fruit, is the immune system, basically, of the fruit. It's protecting it against pathogens. It's what's got all the really high-end nutrients in it, the skins and the seeds. So what I did was I put all the skins in a couple of different pots and made spaghetti, direct spaghetti sauce, right out of just the skins. Forget about the rest of the tomato. It was just his, and they were fantastic tomato sauces. They had a huge amount of nutrient, but a huge amount of taste. So after that, we said, you know, forget all this nonsense. I'm going to just start preparing the tomatoes for canning with the skins on. So I've done that every year since, and they're fantastic. So I'll leave that up to you. I don't like freezing tomatoes because, A, they take up way too much room in the freezers for me, from my perspective. And I can use them, you know, when you freeze a tomato and you thaw it out, it's mush. So why not just put it in the jars, keep it on the shelves with the jars, and you're not taking up freezer space, is my logic. But they also are great for making different types of chutneys. Mix them with cucumber and make different types of relishes. There are just so many really, really good recipes. But you might want to keep the seeds because the seeds are your next year's supply. Okay? When you do the seeds, what tomato seeds are a pain in the butt from my perspective. Very tiny, and they're not like squash seeds or, you know, cucumber seeds, whatever. They're tiny. So what I do is I line them up on strips of paper towel. So I get good organic paper towel. Just, I only need one roll, and it lasts me for years. I line up the seeds and dry them on the paper towels and just roll up the strips of paper towel and then plant them in the next year right on the organic paper towel. Real easy. A lot easier than doing it all the other ways, I thought. Why am I doing this? This is ridiculous. Okay, now another thing I should also tell you, if you're getting your squashes, we've got like, what, 5, 6, 7, 8 different types of squashes this year. Squashes I've never even seen before. We've got some real interesting ones. But I'm doing the same with them, is when you scoop out the middle for the seeds, because you don't typically eat the seeds if they don't eat the. You can roast them, probably like pumpkin seeds. I don't do that. I don't like pumpkin seeds, so I figure I don't like all the other squash seeds. But to be honest, I haven't tried them. What I do is I put them in a jar, fill the jar up with water, and let them sit for about a week. I spin them around every once in a while, a couple times a day with a fork. And what happens is the seed loosens from all that other material, and then you can dry your seeds. And you've got seeds for next year and for all your friends and family, because squashes tend to have a lot of seeds. Okay, so what else? Lettuces. You may have found that your lettuces are starting to bolt now. Once they bolt and they've created that little white fluff on them, you can pull the fluff out and squeeze out all the seeds, and you're going to have tons of lettuce seeds for next year as well. So now's the time of year that you want to start organizing all your containers or envelopes, whatever you put your seeds in, and learn how to save your seeds. Okay? Squash and zucchini are the same in terms of that. Carrots, I don't store split carrots. If the carrots have already split, eat them. You want to pickle them, store them, whatever, when they're whole carrots, not when they're split. There's still controversy. A lot of people have turned around and said, no, you can actually eat carrot leaves. A lot of people historically have said, no, they're toxic. We don't eat them because I don't know what the final answer is on that. I really don't keep lettuces, and I don't pickle them. I don't do anything with them. I don't even know if you can. I actually never thought of that. We do have lots and lots of lettuce. But what I do with it at this time of the year, like I've already said, I let it bolt seed and then replant it. And you can replant it right away. It doesn't need to sit over the winter. So, let's see, what do we have? Carrots, lettuce, onions, okay. When you pull your potatoes as well, the onions actually look obviously a lot different than potatoes. Potatoes, you know that they're ready when the foliage starts to fade and turn brown, or with some when they start to bolt and flower. But either way, both onions and potatoes, put them out in the sun once you have pulled them out and let them dry in the sun for, about a week before you use them or before you store them. And they're very, very good that way. Can't think of anything else to suggest. I tried this year broccoli flowers, I think is what they're called, a cross between broccoli and cauliflowers, and none of them turned out, so I'll have to try it differently next year. I'm not sure if I got too rich a soil or too depleted the soil or what went on, but they did not work out for me this year. Pole beans and green beans were phenomenal. The runner beans, purple beans, yellow beans, green beans, they all worked phenomenally this year. And I am growing them all in the garage. Peppers are doing phenomenally well. I got so many green peppers, yellow peppers, red peppers. I'm going to have to find some good recipes for pickling. Oiling usually is what Tom used to do. He used to barbecue the peppers, and then we put them in an oil as opposed to a pickling vinegar recipe. It was an oil recipe, and he used to love those. Actually, I think I still have a few bottles left over from the good old Tom days. What else can we do? But try and grow them over the winter again in the garage. Anything else? Can't think of anything else to say, so I guess that's it for today. Okay, so I'm Dr. Holly with choicesunlimited.ca. My books are on drhollybooks.com, drholly, H-O-L-L-Y, books.com. You can get all my contact information there if you want to contact me. I do programs around the world. I'm doing 2 and 3 different programs a week lately, last several months. So if you have a group that you would like presentations with, you can always ask me. Do typically over Zoom calls. We do lots and lots and lots of those. So you're more than welcome to invite me to do those for you if you would like. I don't charge for them. I just want people to get the real information, especially about this whole jab thing, how they can protect themselves, what they need to do to detox, inhibit, or prevent or recover from the jab. There's lots of things we can, in fact, do. So hopefully you are listening and taking some of those things into consideration for yourself, your family, and friends. And on that note, I hope you have a really, really great week, and that you put out lots of good energy, prayers, meditations, creative imagery, et cetera, to what you want the world to become as we move through this chaotic period of dismantling the old world so we can move into a beautiful world of love and respect and compassion. On that note, take good care, and we'll talk with you next week. Bye-bye for now.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.